Ready? Looks like we're ready. I'll go ahead and call to order the regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for Tuesday, April 8th, 2014. If the audience would join the board in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Next is public comment number one. This comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. I'm not seeing anybody moving to the mic. Consideration of minutes from April 1st.
Move approval.
Second.
A motion and second. Is there any corrections or additions to the minutes? If not, Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. The minutes have been approved. Personnel actions.
Move approval.
Got a motion and a second. Anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. Personnel actions have been approved. Consideration of claims.
Pass this one to you, Rick.
All right, I'll move approval of claims.
Second.
600,000. I'm not.
I know it.
Got a motion and a second. Anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. The claims have been approved. On consent agenda, if you would add utility permits 1437, 1438, and 1439. Other than that, I think we're ready to go.
Move approval with noted changes.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. Anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. The consent agenda has been approved. That takes us down to public hearing items. Consideration of plans and authorization of bid letting for Story County Community Life Program re-roofing project and setting the bid opening date for April 22nd, 2014. Cal?
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Hi there.
Don't have a whole lot more to add from what we've brought to you before. We do have a more defined numbers on a project estimate of $182,500. So,
Harmson from Ames prepared that.
Sorry. Stecker Harmson in Ames prepared that cost estimate for us over the last couple of weeks. So that's, and they're generally very good and very accurate, so we feel confident about their number.
We need to open the public hearing then, don't we? Okay, I'll go ahead and do that. It's about 4 minutes after 10. If anybody has any anything to add about the re-roof project at CLP, this would be the time to come forward. Not seeing any movement, I will close the public hearing and turn to the board.
I'd move approval of the plan and authorization of bid letting for the CLP re-roofing project and set a bid opening date for April 22nd of 14.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Is there anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. And looks like we'll have our bid opening on the 22nd. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Additional items. Discussion and consideration of the fiscal year 15 Iowa Department of Transportation Secondary Road 5-year construction program. Engineer Darren Moon.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I presented the draft 5-year program to you last week and had a week here for any comments, and I haven't had any from the public. I don't know if the board has, but the intention is to go ahead and approve the final 5-year program at this meeting. Wayne, you weren't here last week, but as in a nutshell, there was very few changes to the paving side of things. There was some additions to bridges, mostly in the fourth and fifth year. The big question mark in bridges was the Hickory Grove Bridge and whether FEMA is going to fund that replacement or not. Our discussion kind of ended with it's probably worth it to, if it even has to delay that project a year, to try to get that FEMA money. So right now it's in development And it could be built next year if everything falls into place with FEMA, or we decide not to go that route. But we haven't got an answer from FEMA yet, unfortunately. So there's nothing to even appeal at this point because we haven't got their final determination.
With the bridge being in the condition it's at now, and the traffic that is being rerouted, you know, for into that area, have we had any real issues, particularly with some of the major landowners in that particular area? Black, I guess I'm thinking of Hertz particularly. I think they were one of the.
No, I haven't heard much. And Paul, you said you may have talked to Hertz a little bit.
Yeah, I've talked to Hertz a couple of different times.
And plan is for the bridge.
Yeah, they would like to see it replaced, but they understand it's going to be a matter of time before it is. So.
No, I kind of glanced at the documents and the information that you had prepared, so I didn't have any issues with what was being proposed. Okay.
No other questions about the program. I'd recommend we go ahead and approve the 5-year program.
So move.
Second. We have a motion and a second to approve the DOT 5-year plan for the county secondary roads. Is there anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Aye, that plan has been approved. Thanks, Darren.
Thank you.
Next is a discussion and consideration of enhanced basic life, basic accident, and long-term disability benefits. Alyssa Wignaller, HR Director.
Morning. Last fiscal year, we switched our provider for our disability and our life insurance from Dearborn to Cigna. So we went out for bid and got all that information. With that change, we did get some better rates. So this year, what I did is I went over and kind of looked to see what the benefits were that we are offering. We have not changed the actual life insurance amount or any of the disability amounts as long as I can remember. I couldn't find any documents. So currently, we provide a $10,000 life insurance policy for our full-time employees or our full-time equivalent employees. Accidental death and dismemberment, and then our long-term disability plan currently pays 60% up to $2,500 a month as a benefit. The life insurance, the $10,000 is kind of low. I did look at some comparisons, other county entities, they offer more than that. So my recommendation would be to up that to $25,000. I think that's a more adequate level to provide for our employees. And the long-term disability, the $2,500 max, just to put it into perspective, 60%, $2,500 max, that would be about at a like $52,000 salary. The $2,500 max is a little low. So if we have employees that are in the upper, you know, we do have some employees that make in the 70s or 80s, that amount that we provide for the long-term disability is kind of low in comparison to other entities or what our broker recommends. What we did is we just went out to Cigna and asked, you know, if we were to make these minor changes to our policies, what would the rates, how would that affect our rates? They came back, our rates are not going to change. Obviously, the volume that we're going to purchase from them will go up because you're going from 10,000 to 25,000. But they did state that the rate will stay the same for all of them, for basic life, basic accident, and our long-term disability. So.
And this is a benefit for every employee. This isn't tied to whether or not they purchase their health insurance.
Correct. This is for every full-time. So any employee that is considered three-quarter time or up to full-time, this would be the mandatories. So they can't opt out of these. These are the employer-provided benefits that is
so
mandatory.
So these are deducted from the flex cash.
Correct.
And so tell me what, in basic life, what is a unit cost? How much are we talking about increasing going from $10,000 to
$25,000? Less than $2 a month.
Less than $2 a month. And then on accident insurance?
Same. The rate stays the same. So I didn't bring my calculator here. But we pay like $1.54 for the life and basic. I should have brought a flex form too. And we're more than doubling that. So that the rate's going to stay the same. We're just going to pay for the extra $15,000.
Okay.
So, and the same with the long-term disability. And I can get the exact figures.
But we're talking about.
It's not very much.
Total cost to employees, you're talking about $5 a month, $10 a month, something
now,
like
that. Now, the only employees on the long-term disability that are going to be affected are those that make over the 50. that are already over the max.
Because if you can't get more than 25, you're just paying for the 2,500.
It's based on your annual salary. So if 60% of your wages is less than $2,500, their rate is not going to change the amount that comes off the flex. Those that make more than the $52,000, they're going to see that rate go up a little bit. They're going to have to pay. But they're also going to get a pretty substantial benefit if they ever need to use that long-term disability.
Right.
I did not, I looked at the short-term disability with the sick leave that we have. Our levels are adequate because most of our employees won't utilize that short-term disability. They'll have enough sick leave to get them through that 90-day waiting period until the long-term kicks in.
Is this considered a policy change where we'd have a 7-day review?
No, this is just a benefit change.
Okay.
And what will happen is once I get the go-ahead to tell Cigna, okay, this is what we want to do, they'll have to get the documents back and I'll have to go through another board meeting.
Yep.
Sign all those.
Well, then all I would ask for, basic life insurance at $10,000, that doesn't even cover funeral.
Nope.
And if the intent here is to help defray some of those kind of costs, I think we need to be there. I feel the same way about accident insurance. $10,000, sadly, is not enough in today's age. And then the reality is, as Alyssa said, we've got numerous county employees that are making substantially more than the $2,500 a month. And so I think we need to go that route. Now, the only caveat I'd like to give is, since this has to come back to us for approval once we get the documents back, I'd like to make sure that this gets into all employees' hands for comments, because at the end of the day, even if it's only, $7, we are talking about it's coming out of the flex cash that we provide for these kind of things.
Well, I think the key there is, again, transparency and awareness of any proposed change. And I think from the analysis that's presented, obviously this would be a tremendous benefit, but we do need to allow people an opportunity to comment if they so desire. So I really appreciate, you adding that caveat to it. So
I can send an email out after this if you don't want to take any action. Go do that and come back next Tuesday.
Well, I wasn't suggesting we don't take action. I was suggesting we go ahead and take action. But you told me, I thought, that we have to take further action in order
right.
to
correct.
Go ahead.
Once I notify Cigna.
So the action is
that
to
we
move
make
forward
the
with a notifying Cigna of the proposed change.
Inform employees. Right. But then when you come back with the documents that we would have to execute, I'd also like to hear of any comments
that
you
get. Okay.
Is this going to affect any union contract?
I just need to notify them.
Give them their third. Okay.
Yep.
Yep.
All right. So is that a motion, sir?
So moved.
Okay. Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the increase in the basic life accident and long-term disability. Is there anything further? Okay. Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. Thanks, Alyssa. Next, consideration of, into feasible right of use agreement for dark fiber service between ICN and Story County. Barb Steinbeck.
Good job pronouncing that.
I'm liking it. We're going to learn something what that means. Indefeasible, okay.
This is a contract. ICN approached us for use of dark fiber, which means that there's nothing else on it, so that they can gain access to the state offices that they support at the Justice Center, which would be the courts, the clerk of court, things like that. We do have spare fiber, so we definitely have it for them to use, and this would just be the piece from Highway 30 going into the Justice Center. And the contract is for 15 years. It can be reviewed annually and, changed or terminated within that 15 years if we want to. You just have to send notice to the other party. But this is for 12 strands, and they're going to pay us a one-time fee of $18,000. I've had Jessica review the contract, and she's okay with it. And as you saw, they have signed it on their end. So,
in reading the contract, okay, so the contract and the name of what we're doing don't line up, because indefeasible means you can't get rid of it. You can't annul it. You can't cancel it. You can't do anything. But yet in the contract, it very clearly says that either party is at 30 or 60 days. Either party may cancel the contract with notice. And so my question comes in, it's clearly not indefeasible.
That was in reference to the entity ICN?
I think you're probably right.
Because it states in the contract, you know, if they no longer exist or if someone purchases them,
right,
that the contract would transfer
to them.
We agree.
That's
yes.
Probably a good idea. It's good clarification, probably. I think you're probably right.
That's the way I took it.
This is the fiber that we own.
Yes.
Right.
And it goes from the Justice Center out to Highway 30.
30, yes.
And that would hook up with the fiber that the ICN owns that they're letting us use.
Four strands. Yes. So it's not the same fiber run, but it's like robbing Peter to pay Paul type of thing. So it's in a way a gentleman's agreement, but we've put a dollar figure on it, and we're not using that fiber. There are 72 strands in a run of fiber, and we definitely have 12 that are available for them to use. I don't see that we'll need those in the future, in the next 15 years. We've got other new fiber opportunities coming in, so I think it's a perfect chance for us to help them and in turn have them support our offices.
It'll help recoup some of that money that we paid to have that fiber run in the first place.
A little.
Yeah,
right, it's
18,000
over 15 years, is that right?
But my question would be, is under the current setup the way it is now, could there potentially be an issue with us in terms of the servers or the, you know, how all of this thing flows? What shortcomings, if any, could impact our overall operation, since this is kind of a separate line mainly for, you know, the Justice Center and the Clerk of Courts? Is there any, you know, at disadvantage for us over the long haul?
No. After the fiber is spliced to their connection, there's really no way it interferes with anything that we do.
So is there potential when we look at city government and City of Ames and some of the other areas where ICN, Iowa State University, currently has an area that you can get on? Is there potential there? You know, right now, you know, governments for years have not necessarily had easy access to the ICN. I'm hoping that could be changed over time, but also the ICN under these new broadband proposals and everything may become a moot point down the road too. Yeah,
that's true. Yeah. I think what they're looking for is just enhanced service to their customers, whereas in some of those other connections they may feel a little throttled with the bandwidth, and this will help with that.
Talk to me about capacity of our fiber run, specifically the one from 30 up to the Justice Center. What percentage of its capacity are we realistically going to use?
Well, you mean right now or in the foreseeable future?
Both.
We're not even using 50% right now.
Okay.
So out of 72 strands, that's pretty good. And as I mentioned earlier, we've got some fiber coming in from north. The phone company in Colo is running fiber, so we've got that opportunity. And then we've got, of course, our fiber that we own that goes to Ames, so that's another direction we can bring fiber in. So I don't think this will affect our future plans at all. And it's not always good to put all your eggs in one basket anyway. So having several avenues of access is a good idea. I'm also working with Iowa State and the city to come up with some redundancy for the 911 network, so we won't even need that. We're actually going to use some of the DOTs, the four strands they gave us for that. So there won't be any impact on any of our projects in the foreseeable future. So I think it's a good, like I said, it's nice to be able to do something for them and receive something in return, and I think it's a goodwill gesture.
Yep. Okay. I'd move approval of the indefeasible right of use agreement with ICN.
Second.
A motion and a second. Is there anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. That's been approved. Next, discussion and consideration for hiring a contract employee to assist the IT staff.
Yes. As you know, I have an opening for a network administrator, and we posted this on the new NeoGov site, and I forgot how many hits Alyssa said we had. it's like close to 300 hits and only 5 applications. It is very difficult to get someone with those credentials. I mean, there's a lot of IT folk out there, but not with the specific skills needed for this position. I have been working with Robert Half, and they've presented a few candidates who would certainly fit the bill. I've got another interview scheduled with an internal applicant tomorrow, but I would like your permission to go ahead, and if I think a contract worker that I have already interviewed would work better for the position, if it would be okay to go ahead with that. It's not something we've done recently in the past, so.
Have you thought about it in terms of in the contract employee, is this something renewable each year automatically, or does it something that could be it is sort of like a temporary year-to-year contract, and so if we determine that this isn't something that we want to do in the future, we could do so. But if you also felt that you wanted to bring on someone in-house, you would still have that flexibility once this contract was terminated with this particular employee?
Yes. What I'm looking at it as is contract to hire. I'd like to try someone out first for 60, 90 days. The way the terms in working with headhunters in the past, if you hire within the whatever the term of your contract is, if you hire within 6 months, you pay a percentage of the salary. If you decide to hire after 1 year, it's a flat fee. So I think I would, due to the complexity of our network and the skills that I need this candidate to have, it would be nice to be able to try them out and see if this is exactly what I need.
And maybe this is something you've already done, but have you had a chance to kind of review this with Alyssa a little bit and
yes.
See if you guys are kind of on the same page? Good.
Barb, is there a difference in rate that we'll pay for a contract position than what we would pay for if we just hired somebody full-time?
Alyssa and I went over the rate for the last employee, so we kind of used that as a guideline. And there were several different rates of the candidates that Robert Half presented to me. So we'd like to stick as close to the former rate as possible, the rate that we were currently paying for the full-time employee.
You can negotiate with them?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, and then so that I understood, to make sure I understood correctly, so then there would be no payment to the headhunter unless and until we permanently hire whatever individual they place.
Yes. No fees. I mean, we'd pay the salary, of course, which I'm sure.
But that's going to the individual. So what I'm asking you is the headhunter.
I don't think it does it?
We pay them, and they
pay them, and then they pay them. It's sort of like the contract we had with the HR person some years ago, I think.
Absolutely. But what I'm wanting is I'm wanting the headhunter, for lack of a better term, to be on the hook to find us somebody that we hire permanently, not just making their hay by the monthly fee that we're sending them, and then they're sending the person that's working for us substantially less. I understand a little bit less, but like
right.
I say, I want their focus to be find Story County somebody that Story County is going to hire on a full-time basis, not just fill this hole.
Well, and, yes,
I mean, the goal would be there, but I mean, I think when you look at a headhunter or a contracting agency, so forth, they're going to try to provide you with the best credential person that they possibly can in order to for us to maintain that good faith relationship and want to continue to utilize them for that. But whether or not we hire someone or someone from outside, I think that option would still be available to us. But that network appears to be the best place to kind of get the people with the expertise we're looking for, I would assume.
She presented several people. I interviewed two. I wasn't real impressed. They were good, but not for what I needed. And then she did some digging and came up with this last individual who was happily employed, but liked what I had to offer when I interviewed him. So yeah, I think she's working to make sure that I get exactly what I've asked for.
Yeah, and I agree, Wayne,
I agree
with what you're saying, but it's important for us to remember that any company is going to gravitate toward what makes them money.
Oh, yeah.
And so all I want to make sure of is that if our goal is to find somebody that we permanently employ in that position, we want the carrot hanging out there for whoever's doing that for us to find that permanent spot, not to fill that temporary spot.
Right.
I got you. All right. Oh, here comes a listen.
I just want to clarify, when we go through a staffing agency, they want us to hire them. That's how they make their money.
If we actually
hire to do that, because then we either have to pay a percentage of the salary to them as a finder's fee or whatever they call it, or that flat fee. They don't want us, they don't really want us just to keep using the temp agency to keep that person on a month-to-month basis.
Because their margins should be less, and that's what I wanted to make sure of. And
then
the second one for budgetary impact, as long as we're somewhere close to what we were paying the previous individual down there.
And I take into consideration the benefits, the amount that we pay in employee benefits, the FICA, the IPERS, the health, the flexible benefit and everything like that on top of the hourly wage that we were paying the full-time employee.
Yeah, well, the reality is we got X number of dollars budgeted to fill this position. We need to have the position filled, but we need to keep it as close to those dollars as we can.
Correct.
Trying to do, yes.
Yep.
We won't actually be paying him benefits.
No.
No, but we'll be spending those dollars as it goes through. Yeah.
Right.
Correct.
Okay, good.
So then I'll move approval for hiring contract employee for IT.
Second.
Motion and a second. Anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye.
Thanks, Barb.
Thank you.
That takes us to agency reports, which we don't have any listed. Departmental reports. Story County Engineer Darren Moon. Welcome back.
Didn't we get your departmental report last week? That was a lot of time.
This one will be shorter.
All right.
Okay, well, I think we finally made it through winter. We're headed towards spring, and we had a snow event last week.
Easy.
But I hope we're done. It's been a long winter for us.
Aura.
Overall, I think we came through it pretty well and without a real strain on our budget. We budget $50,000 for overtime. We're probably in the $60,000 range now, about $10,000 over. To give you some reference, in 2009 we spent $75,000, and in 2010 we spent $131,000 in overtime. But then again, the past 2 years, it was in the $10,000 to $15,000 range. So 50 is a good average, but you never know what to expect in Iowa. The other part of our winter budget is the salt. And right now we haven't got all the bills in, but it looks to be pretty close to our budget amount of $90,000. But as I mentioned last week in our budget amendment discussion, we do need to fill our salt shed in preparation for next year. And that's probably going to take in the neighborhood of 400 more tons, another $25,000. So, and we'll use that money we got from FEMA on our flood damage to make up that difference. But we do want to make sure we fill that salt shed, because rumors are salt prices with the shortage are going to be going up for next year quite a bit. I just showed a picture here of the cold temperatures all winter did have an impact on our pavements, and mainly our asphalt pavements. They expand and they crack. I've never seen it where the crack has actually went through the shoulder rock, and that's actually about an inch wide crack, and I put a hard ruler in it, went down over a foot, and I've never seen that before. So unprecedented cold temperatures, it's tough on the pavements, but we seal those cracks, but the ones that have been sealed, they expanded so much that it ripped them apart and had a lot of damage to our existing seal. But this is one of our newer pavements, so I don't like to see it that soon, but that's what the temperatures give us. The good news is our gravel roads, we anticipated somewhat of a nasty thaw and soft conditions, but it didn't really go that way. We had a handful, 5 to 10 miles, that were pretty rough. There's a couple down by Huxley we almost had to close, almost impassable, but we made it through. Luckily, we didn't get that big downpour when we had the frost really high and to leave that layer on top that gets really a mess. So I think we're going to come out of that pretty good on our rock budget. In between storms, our maintenance crews did a lot of brush clearing where possible. I just wanted to show you this one. This is on Cameron School Road. It was just an opportunity to get some trees taken out in the right-of-way. This is that new Bella Woods subdivision. So the property changed hands into a developer. The developer didn't care so much about these trees out in the front, so all these trees have been taken out now. And this is one of our highest accident count roads for a number of reasons, all the driveways and there's a lot of trees and brush. So it's our opportunity to get that cleared out, so you see a big change if you drive through there now. And there's a proposed new subdivision just to the south of this that's apparently coming online before too long. I just wanted to comment too quickly. We did have to cut off our brush clearing April 1st now. We have some new Indiana bat environmental issues we have to deal with. We can't clear trees after April 1st all the way through the entire season now. It was just southern Iowa, but it's bumped up into Story County now, so we have to deal with that. And it's more difficult to deal with on our construction projects because we have a contract and the contractors tied to that too. So we're done with the brush clearing, and we've moved to put the buckets back on our excavators, and we're into our ditch cleaning mode again. We're also into rock hauling mode. Contract rock hauling started yesterday. This is where Martin Marietta hauls with their own trucks to the blue routes. They have a lot of trucks. Only received one call about so far. What are all these trucks doing out here? But that's what they're for, and they'll be done in just a week or two. It won't take them long. Our crews are just over in the two townships to the east hauling gravel out of the Marshall County pit. So we hope to get four townships covered with some new rock this spring. New motor grader transition went well. Had our 10 motor graders taken down as trades, and the 10 new ones came up. Picture me in this motor grader. It's so easy to drive, I can even drive.
Where are you? I can't see you.
I heard you crashed and burned in the simulator.
Just for fun. No, I can actually take this out in blade roads. I wouldn't even try in the older models with all the levers and stuff. It's so confusing. But you can see I'm just sitting there with two joysticks sitting straight up. Ergonomically, it's a lot better on your body. So, and you can also see, I can see straight down out of the windows now and see the blade and see a lot better what you're doing. So it's a lot better machine. Even our older time motor grader operators are catching on to it, and once they get in, they don't want to go back to the old method. So
I've heard several positive comments from a few people in Ames that understand a little bit about large equipment like this and motor graders and things, and they thought that, you know, going to the lease option was a real plus for us. And so I'm anxious to see how
it's been a good deal. And
to be able to save, I mean, direct cost $40,000 a year, but realistically more like $75,000 or $80,000 a year.
Oh, yeah.
When you talk about repairs and go to an entirely new fleet, I think that's a hard one to argue with for anybody.
Yeah, we're really going to see our maintenance costs start to go down now, and we even ordered these had spare tires that came with them, so we won't have to spend money on motor grader tires for a long time. That's a big expense for us. So,
those are $1,000 a piece, right?
Well, at least, yeah. Moving on to construction projects. First, I wanted to throw this picture in on the spring thaw. Last year was the bad one. You see that big ice chunk? That's like a foot thick ice and 10 foot wide. Last year, the water came up so quickly and high speed is why it did so much damage. But we get some of that each year. This year, we had some, but it caught the bridges but didn't do the damage it did last year. The reason I bring that up is our first bridge construction project of the year was down at Indian Creek 9. This was the existing bridge, and they started before Christmas on this, so they had a very good start. You can see those piles, the three together, they know when they do any type of early spring construction, they got to do that in case the ice comes down. There was another one of this just on the other side. Actually got taken completely out with the ice that came down and damaged the first the wood piling you see under the bridge are just temporary formwork to hold up the formwork till they get the bridge poured. So it did damage the first pile there, which luckily it was only the first one. So we were able to do some bracing. You can see that beam. They were able to drive two piling on the sides of it and beam across. But if it would have got any further, they had all their steel set up on top. They would have had to take that all apart. So
this is temporary.
That's all temporary.
And I got go back to the other picture because it just raised a question. So we saw the picture before this where the ice was right up against where we had poured some concrete, but it's right into the bridge. Does it make – so I assume that that's a temporary piling that's out in the water. Is that right? Just to break things up.
That was just to protect their temporary wood piling.
Did it make any sense at all to have those on some of our – bridges that are taking the damage where we put those in on a permanent basis just to break things up as they're coming down?
We have it on most of them. You'll see on this one back here.
Yeah, so I'm picturing that one just concrete. Out 10 or 12 feet if you had a post in right here.
Even the next pier over, that one doesn't even have anything but the wood piling, and for some reason it doesn't take damage like this one. They've recognized this is one that always took the hits, and they protected it. But, yeah, there's a few. Most of them we have some sort of icebreaker, whether it's a pile or concrete.
Just
like
something
this.
Further out from the bridge so that it breaks up before it gets to the bridge.
Yep. Okay. We only have a few of these left. Most, you see, the piers in this one was concrete, so that will take the damage for the future, and a lot of our newer bridges are concrete. So we only have a handful of those left, but, yeah, you're right. Any of them we can get those icebreakers in, we try to. But we were able to get that issue resolved, and then we poured this about 2 weeks ago. That's the concrete pumper truck in the background. The pour went well. Could see this bridge open within 2 weeks, the road back open. So this first bridge we've had open before planting season, I can never recall.
Normally they would probably just be getting started or would have just started here a few weeks ago.
Yep. The next major bridge project of this year is the North Dakota Bridge. That red dot is the bridge. We have a pre-construction meeting next Monday with the contractor. Right now they're thinking 3 weeks out till the start date, but they don't know for sure. So we'll post some notices, and we're going to send letters to everybody that lives on North Dakota because that gets over 1,000 vehicles a day, so it's going to impact a lot of traffic flow. But the good news, we have a paved mile each way, so the green will be the official detour. That 215th Street's actually gravel, but we don't want to take the detour down into Ames because the signage gets real confusing in town, so we're going to leave it on the gravel. I don't think it'll get too much traffic after the initial traffic. They get used to the route. So, and while we have that closed, we're going to try to get Manette's in and use some of our maintenance money to do some those temporary or overlays on North Dakota to try to get some additional life out of that without reconstructing the entire road. We're going to start on the just north of the tracks and do that stretch out of this fiscal year's money, and then maybe do some on the north stretch after July 1st.
But you think we'll be able to do an overlay from the railroad tracks up to where the new bridge is going in?
At least up to 215th.
Okay.
It's not too bad from 215th up to the bridge, but we need to do some shoulder work and stuff in there. There's some shoulder washouts that happen all the time, but it's so difficult to work on that road with the traffic and
right.
the curve. So while it's closed, it'll be the perfect
How's
time.
The perk, yeah.
So we're going to be doing a lot of maintenance type stuff on the road while it's closed. Cameron School Road, this is just north of that North Dakota Bridge. They had some deck patching. It's been going on for a little over a week. Just got that wrapped up yesterday, so we wanted to make sure we got this done before North Dakota closed down. This is a very difficult road to work on again. But I had to one-lane it during the day, but you can see they have to saw everything square and then jackhammer down to the steel and then patch that, and very fast curing concrete, so they're able to get it back open at night. But that is completed as of yesterday. We had three precast box culvert lettings that went through the DOT letting. I don't have my pointer with me, but that's the one down south. The one in the middle by Richland, and then the one way up by Story City would be the three Farnham Market ones. We have a local letting next week for another precast, so the intention is to try to catch that same contractor while they're in here to do the local job and have some cost savings there. That local one is the one up by Zeering there. And then we have a letting another month from now for it's a cast in place. It's a different kind of box culvert, and that's the one south of Story City. And the intention there is to catch the cast in place. North Dakota is a cast in place box culvert, a triple. That's a twin south of Story City, so we hope to catch that same contractor to do that work and see some cost savings there.
Why do you use a cast in place? Is it that it's too wide to use a prefab or what?
Mostly size. Sometimes on the pavements, you want to get in and out of there quickly, so you use the precast. But when you get to the bigger size, they don't turn out as well with at least the twin boxes and especially the triples. They don't even make triples, so North Dakota had to be a cast in place. And cast in place is probably a little bit better product in the long run, but the precast is a little bit cheaper and you can get it done quicker. So there's trade-offs.
Darren, maybe I'm missing something in my thought process here, but I wanted to ask it anyway. When I look at these areas here where we're doing work now, and then we've been talking about road use funding and bridge and road repair, these are obviously existing things that we have identified over the last several years, and we're able to kind of get through that. And we'll be able to quantify this. And I would assume that most of these are coming through local property tax and any other grant funding through either farm to market or other roads. And so how do we continue to build a global view of not only current spending, but looking at the other future spending that we're going to be needing over the next 3 to 5 to 10 years, so that we can continue to educate the public in terms of when we're asking for the legislature or the federal government to put more dollars into our infrastructure, that we can definitely point to, you know, these are the reasons why, and then we have a pattern of deterioration of our roads and bridges. So you kind of see where I'm going with my thought process here.
And not really construction-related, but I mentioned to the board last week, we do a lot of stuff through our Engineer Service Bureau in Des Moines, and another thing they're working on is what they call the rock analyzer. They're putting something together that shows how much rock we need to be spending on. This is statewide, and it's based on a probability. Like, they're shooting for a 1 in 6 chance the roads turn into mud if you don't put this much rock, and it shows you how much each county needs to be spending, and that's all for the state legislature to show them, here's what we need to be spending, or there's going to have to be some drastic changes out here. We've hit the construction side pretty hard the past few years, a lot through the Service Bureau with the legislature, but that doesn't seem to really be the issue now. That I think it's pretty well sunk in down there that it's needed, but to take that next step and to actually do something about it is we're
struggling. Well, to me, Story County is a great case study in exactly what happens when you go through prolonged years of not being able to keep up on the maintenance because there's not the funding. It was roughly 210 miles of paved road, just doing the paved road, not worried about bridges or gravel roads. So realistically, if you figure roads can last for 30 years, you need to do 7 miles a year, and we're doing 2.5 or 3 miles a year. And the only reason Story County's in pretty good shape or reasonable shape compared to others right now is, Wayne, we bonded in 2008, I think, for what, $9 million?
$7.4 million.
But
we didn't spend
so
all.
In essence, raise taxes to pay it. We were able to do it based on economic development, but in essence, raise taxes in order to pay for roads. But that just caught us back up. Now what we find is we're starting to fall behind again. And it's not overnight, but over time, if you're only doing 2.5, 3 miles a year and you need to be doing 7, it's going to catch up with you. That's the reality of where we are. Darren, did I state that about accurately?
That's good. Good representation.
Good. Good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That Jasper County Bridge should be starting hopefully sometime this week, and that's between Cambridge and Collins, straight down on the county line is where that bridge project will be. I mentioned the North Dakota patching, and last construction-related project, I touched on this last week, this is that grant We actually got the official approval, and it was on your consent agenda today, the federal aid agreement to get this edge line painting done. It was estimated $170,000, completely paid for with federal aid funds. It was a first-come, first-served deal that we got in time and got a considerable chunk of that, which should help lower our local budget for paint because it's long-lasting paint markings. They'll mill it out and put it in so the snow plows won't take it off. So that should help ease our local budget as far as paint goes. Just a comment on the Alliant Pipeline. That's not this photo here. It's the next topic. But the Alliant Pipeline has delayed a bit on their new line from Ames up past Story City. It won't start till now, until after July 1st. That's probably good for us because we're inspecting it for the landowners on the county side, and we build Alliant for our services, but it has been delayed. They didn't say why. I assume it's property acquisition issues. But
how are they going to? Because that is primarily to supply DuPont, right? DuPont and the possible growth of Ames on the east side.
The DuPont connection is already in, and I don't know if it's operational.
DuPont connection is a smaller pipeline, and that's already in. I think this is actually for the city of Ames. I think they're power
transitioning over.
They would like to, yeah.
That east at East Development, if they ever get that going.
And I think the university is going to partially convert to natural gas.
Huh. Okay.
This photo is just something I wanted to make you aware of. I don't really want to show you the details because it's still preliminary. The DOT has some preliminary plans for what they want to do when they do I-35. Since they're raising I-35 here, that's Ryerson's Corner, if you know where that is, just off the interstate, and the Skunk River Bridge is at the bottom. On the gravel road in the middle of the picture, just north of the gravel road bridge, they're going to propose a largest box culvert I've seen on a road, that quad cell, 15-foot opening, just a huge box culvert right there. And that will take the water, when it gets high, it'll take the water under I-35, and then they're going to dig a somewhat deep ditch still within the DOT right-of-way on the east side of the interstate down to the Skunk River. The reason they had to do that is because by raising I-35, it backs water up, so they have to let that water through somehow. And the interesting part of that is, you see section 19 there, that's the part we just took out of the drainage district.
We just took out of the drainage district. That's been in that drainage district for, 80 years? And, I mean, months ago, we took it out, and now it's going to be right back in.
I let them know about that. Their opinion is it's not going to affect it because the only time that's going to get used is really high water, and that water, which would have went over the interstate anyway and inundated the east side of the interstate. So the only time they'll ever see water through that culvert actually get out of that ditch they're building is when it would have went over the interstate anyway.
But our ditch is on the far right side of the picture, right? It goes up, and then it angles back over.
About where are you referring to there, Rick and Darren, approximately? Just I'm trying to visualize where we are.
Somewhat.
Yeah, okay.
Talk about putting the big culvert in right there. Is that right?
Correct, just north of the.
Okay.
And they're going to replace the bridge.
This piece of property out of the drainage district.
Okay.
That was all part of that because they said
water can't get under the interstate anywhere.
The interstate intersected the drainage district.
Okay. All right.
But I wanted to make you aware of that, and I think 2017 is right now when they propose to do that, so we got a few years, but when we get some more definite plans, we'll...
And that's when they're going to do the flyover coming into Ames rather than having the clover leaf, right?
That's 16 or 17 as well, I believe.
I would imagine it's all one project, isn't it?
I don't think so. I think the flyover is the first priority, and then raising all this. I don't know if that will happen all at the same time or not. Okay. But the bridge over the interstate, the county gravel road, that gets replaced too because they need that big ditch to take the water south. So they got to widen. So that'll take a whole new bridge over the interstate. So that'll close down our 265th for a while.
And they're responsible for that?
Yes. Correct. Okay. That is a DOT bridge, not a county bridge.
Okay.
And they were going to put a berm over, like where you said the county drainage ditch is. And I said, well, you really can't do that because it's an open ditch. They need to be able to drain that farm ground over there. So they said, well, we'll have to put pipes or something under it. I don't know really why they were doing that, to protect the ditch from this water or something. But I get more details, I'll let you know. But I wanted to be aware this is what's proposed at this point. Another drainage district issue I just wanted to bring up quickly. Paul, you called me about this one up north of DD11. That's a picture of that blowout on Tweet's property, I believe it is. It's mostly the water coming out of the field blew out the edge of the berm. You can see it pushed all the material into the stream. We'll try to get in there before planting starts here and pull that back up and maybe riprap the side as much as we can. There's not much bank there to riprap, but we'll do what we can to kind of stabilize that. But if you look downstream of that, it's a mess all the way down. So we'll hit this one. This is really the only spot that's blowing out into the field at this point. But the rest is getting close, and that's you see the trees is redirecting it and causing it to meander. But we've had the district meeting, so we know that the whole project's probably not going to happen. But we'll try to hit
one. That was the fun one. Right.
Can't wait to go through that again.
Just real quick, I mentioned in January we're starting a new work order system. Again, software developed through the Service Bureau, so it was free to us. And you can't read it, but we have 91 work orders so far, and the map indicates which ones are yet to be completed on the right side. But we're finding it to be a very beneficial system, better for us to keep track of what we got going on. Dust control, just a reminder. Applications are due by April 1st, but I believe the applicators want them 2 weeks before that. And I've seen their ads in the newspaper, so that they're the ones that kind of get the word out for us, and they send previous applicants letters in the mail. So they should all be notified. But just a reminder on that. And we also have summer help applications due April 11th by the end of this week. Hope to hire for summer help. And our summer help will be even more important this year because I believe everybody that elected to take comp time has a full bank of comp time with the winter we had. So we have a lot of people using that comp time this summer, so our summer help kind of supplements so we can keep things rolling. Lastly, I just wanted to at least introduce you to our building recommendations, put together a little packet I passed out to you. I anticipate we'll just attach this to our capital improvements request. The next one coming up this fall will include this with it to kind of give the bigger picture because our requests are kind of go in stages. And the first stage would be the Kelly. In total, we want to end up with 4 outsheds, and then the one main shed here in Nevada will stay the same with some improvements. But that kind of summarizes the 4 sheds we want. The stars are the 4 new sheds. The actual locations are somewhat undetermined. It depends where we can get property. But the highest priority would be the Kelly one. The 8 green dots would then go away. The 2 on the south, the Maxwell and Slater, are both not used at this point already, so that makes that Kelly one our highest priority. Second priority would be the it's either around Gilbert or in Roland. It's currently in Roland, but if we can move it down to Gilbert, it might be beneficial to get it closer to the quarry so we can have some more truck storage over in that area. That just kind of gives you the general picture of what we'd like to do, and it's got some estimated cost information on what those buildings would cost.
So we're roughly $1 million over X number of years in order to get this done. My real question is, today we took action on the Slater shed and we gave that back to the city. Do any of the remaining sheds and property that we're talking about not using have any value? Does the one in Ames carry any value along with it?
Very little. That property owner stopped in about a week ago. He would really like to see that shed gone because he's developing some storage around it.
Well, I think he'd like to buy that area.
Access is a real issue. He doesn't have very good access. He has to go around our shed, and it's really tight, so he'd like to see it gone. And I'd mentioned in that shed in particular, you go in there in the winter, it's not so bad now. We got the truck, the plows off the front of the trucks, but when the plows are on the trucks, you can't even walk on the front or the back. We have to tip it up just to get it to fit into the building. We've just outgrowing those. But like the condition of them all are to the point where I don't see them having much value. I can't think of any that they'd probably use. They'd probably demolish it and put something else up.
Yeah, I mean, Darren, I'm with you that we need to do this. It's more efficient if we can get down to 4 like this. I'm just trying to figure out where the $1 million is going to come from.
No, I understand. And like say the Kelly's the first priority, and beyond that, we can get by.
And that's all in. That's a $200,000 deal. By the time we acquire land, and I know I'm speaking in rough numbers, acquire land and build what you need there. $200,000 is a reasonable estimate.
I think we had building at $180,000 and whatever the land's going to cost us in development.
And you need
land.
A couple acres.
So it could be $250,000.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, just quickly, I wanted to comment. I just noticed yesterday coming back south of Roland on our 77, there's another DuPont site that went up. I didn't realize it, but they've got bales out there now. That just happened recently, I guess, but... So we drove by that, and they did rock the two drives like we had talked, but the spacing of the bales isn't exactly what we discussed. I think they have six rows tightly spaced instead of the three and then the 100 foot, so it's not exactly going according to plan, but they did rock it, and they put a good drainage system. They have tile in between each row of bales and everything, so they've tried to get it to drain properly. But if you're interested in looking at another site that went up, is wanted to mention you could look at that one and see how things are being built.
It would be a little bit of a motivator to
spread the stacks out a little bit. When every time one starts on fire, you burn up half a site. But
yeah, but you burn up a site, you're talking thousands of dollars.
Right.
To do it, I think to do it right, you're probably talking more, right. Substantially more than that.
And in the scheme of things, that all the bales they lost up there northeast of Nevada was only probably a 5 or 6 day supply.
Right.
When they're in full production. So.
No, it's much more of a PR issue as I see it. But the problem that I see for this board is, first of all, we got limited authority. No matter how you slice it, this is an ag issue. The state, we have limited authority on these kind of things. But the state is going to have to dig in and address it and either give authority to the local boards, or they're going to have to set some parameters, in my mind, much like a master matrix for CAFOs. We don't have that yet. The second problem that I see is right now we're dealing with one entity, DuPont. Either DuPont is doing it right or they're not doing it right, but that's going to change here in a matter of a couple years, where it's going to be individual contractors who are going to be handling each one of these, and now you're dealing with, you know, at least tens and maybe hundreds of different individuals. That's, to me, where it starts to really get tricky.
All right, thank you.
Yep, Darren, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Darren.
Mm-hmm. Liaison assignments to committee meetings. Wayne?
Just a brief meeting with Ron Christian yesterday, basically just a quick update as to where things were, and I didn't have anything new to give him at that time, but he was just sharing with me some concerns with staff and so forth, and potentially some of them are at least looking for other options and things of this nature, and we discussed that our awareness and understanding of that, so he just wanted to keep us in the loop, and if there are any big changes coming down the pike, I told him we'd keep him informed. So, but I had a very short, good meeting with him.
We're going to have to, Wayne, you're doing a great job with that, and I'm really appreciative for both you and Ron digging into that. But this is one of those areas that we're going to have to keep our eye on the ball. Because we said all the way through, our primary concern is continuing to provide those services to those Story County residents who need and utilize those services. And we can't let staffing become a deterrent to us being able to provide those. So we're going to have to figure out, and we're going to have to continue to work with the region and figure it out, but we're going to have to figure out how we get where we're going in this.
Yep. All right. Good.
Rick, anything?
No.
Public forum number two, comments from the public on items not on this agenda. The board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but may do so in the future. Not seeing anybody move towards the mic. Announcements from the supervisor. Wayne?
Just a couple things. I sat in last week on two meetings in Roland with Drew Camp and the members of the city council looking at future broadband opportunities and needs for their industrial park and so forth. And we had representatives from the Stratford telco company that supplies much of the service to Roland, and also does some for Gilbert, and could meet some of the demand. Actually appears to be the best company to expand opportunities for the community of Roland if the citizens so desire it. And then we also met on Friday with Minerva Valley. They were very appreciative of just being at the table, but also recognized that unless they could get over half of the clients in that particular area, it would not be cost effective for them. And so the Stratford group appears to be in a unique position, but at the same time they are aware of the need to expand services than what they're currently doing right now. And so I thought that both of those meetings was a tremendous opportunity for me to understand some of the nuances that are happening in some of our areas, and then what the future may hold as we try to reach the underserved, more rural communities, because currently infrastructure is not currently in place to meet that demand. But I think we've got several people now at least working together, and I'm anxious to see just what they finally are going to decide to do. I was told by Barb as well from IT that the Colo Group is expanding its opportunities through Ames and to Gilbert, and they're becoming very key players in this whole area too. So that to me is one of the things that I was really encouraged about, is that we do have several entities all trying to see what they can do to provide broadband options for our clients who so desire it, and particularly as it relates to businesses. But that was a good thing. And then the other one was, as you know, tomorrow evening I'll be leaving for Omaha, Nebraska to attend the second annual National Cybersecurity Symposium that's put on by NACO. And they have a Barb Steinbrenner and I, we both attended last year at the very first one. And beside federal partners and people from Homeland Security and so forth, we all know that as counties becoming so heavily in use to technology, that we're all vulnerable to cyber attacks. And so there's a whole array of outstanding speakers and presenters that will be sharing information with us. This year, they put in on Friday just a special session primarily for elected officials. And it's called Bridging the Gap Between Elected Officials and Cyber Professionals. And so they've brought in a panelist of several people that will share some of their experiences and give elected officials more of a heads up of why they need to work very closely with IT or any of the entities that they use towards trying to make sure that they are addressing possible future concerns in this particular area. So I'm anxious to see what additional information we'll be able to pick up while we're there. Unfortunately, Barb was not able to go this year at the last minute, so I told her that I will make sure that the taping, the audio information that I receive, and the handouts will be shared with her and others as well. So, good.
Awesome.
Yep.
Okay, I'll pass also. Move adjournment.
Second.
Motion and second for adjournment. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.